Hey, folks. Time for another movie retrospective.
Yeah, this is a good one we grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
On HBO and stuff. The Funhouse.
From 1981, I think. Yeah.
All-star cast, directed by the dude who did
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Tobe Hooper.
Yeah. A very different kind of movie, but just as good.
Better quality. It's got some similarities, actually. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like a classic. I feel like this one is kind of like an underrated gem kind of thing. Sorry, my voice still sounds crappy. Like, if you listen to our Richard Ramirez show, I was talking about how I had a little bit of a cold. Well, it went into, like, a big, huge, whomping cold that's kind of kicking my ass.
Yeah.
And I'm actually just now got my voice back. I couldn't even talk yesterday.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I kind of sound like crap.
This is a good one because it's like, it's very much like the first one in a certain way where it's like a family.
Yeah.
A family involved in crime, but then there's a darker side.
The freaks and weirdos.
There's freaks and weirdos involved, and they're working inside a carnival. And then some kids get wrapped up with them, you know? And there's a true monster in this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like a combo between, like, kind of a low-key slasher and, like, a monster movie.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even though he's kind of a person, I mean, he's kind of a monster, too. But this, actually, I want to give a shout-out to friend of the show, Rob, who was the one who sent us the DVD of this, so thank you very much. It actually, you know what's amazing is that I had seen this movie several times in the 80s, like on VHS, and I think I saw it on cable a few times, and it always looked real muddy and shitty, and like the lighting is bad and stuff. But now that it's been restored, the DVD and the Blu-ray, and I've heard the Blu-ray is really good too.
Yeah.
This actually looks amazing. This is like a really nice looking movie.
Yeah, it was a standard DVD. There wasn't any extras or anything on it, really.
Yeah, just a trailer.
And it looked pretty tight. It looked a lot better than it did on television.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get to see this in the theater.
No, I didn't either.
The monster, I always called him Tad. But Tad was actually the little brother that was in the jar.
Yeah, that was the fetus.
Don't know what.
His name's Gunter.
Gunter's the name.
Although I don't know if they ever called him.
No, because they just called him Boy.
Movie.
His dad just called him Boy.
Yeah.
Boy, you know. Yeah. And, the Boy mask looked a lot better on DVD than it looked back on television and HBO.
Oh, yeah.
He's super pale, and he's basically two-headed in a way. It's kind of, his head's kind of trying to split apart into two different heads, and he's albino, and fangs, pink eyes. He has to wear a Frankenstein mask in order to move around in public. That's how ugly he is.
Do you know that, like, this didn't even occur to me, but I was watching an interview with Tobe Hooper earlier today where he was talking about this movie, and he said, I didn't really make this explicit in the movie, but you know the scene where the four teenagers, like, go and they're in, like, the Freaks of Nature exhibit, and there's, like, a cow with two heads.
There's a cow with two heads.
And there's a cow with a cleft palate?
Yeah.
He's like, I almost wanted to imply that Gunter, the monster, was like that one of the cows was his mom.
Oh, okay. yeah, I see that.
Like, you know what I mean? So he's like, that's why
he might have been part cow.
Yeah, because he's like, after I saw like the two headed cow and the cow with the cleft palate, they were gonna put in the movie.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, we should make the monster look like that just to kind of hint. Like, they didn't really say anything about it, but you know, because he had a human dad, obviously, because the one guy, the carnival barker,
but
was
Tad was in the jar with the damn cows.
Yeah.
Remember, it's in the back, in the freak show.
So maybe he was also half
cow. Half cow. I didn't make the connection.
I didn't either,
I thought they were trying to say that maybe they came from a place where the water was bad or something, where mutations were going on.
Yeah,
that's how I took it. But
that's what Tobe Hooper said. He said, he's like, I didn't want to like make it explicit or anything, but I just thought it would be amusing if we made the monster like look kind of like that, so you'd like implicitly make that connection.
It's
like, maybe the cow was his mom. Like, maybe there's some cow fucking going on at this carnival.
It's got a cool cast. It's got a 70s hot rod in there. I think that might have been a Chevelle or Camaro. I didn't really get it.
I think it was a Pontiac Le Mans, actually.
Is that what it was? Okay. Because I was saying, what kind of car is that? I kept waiting.
I think it's a Pontiac Le Mans. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not a car person.
Kept waiting to see the badges on it. I never got to see it. It looked like a Camaro or something, or maybe a Chevelle. But it was look cool. It had cuties in it. Had a girl who played Stanzi in Amadeus, if you ever saw that movie.
This was her first movie, actually. I really liked her in the Elizabeth Berridge and her perky boobies. You get to see those in the first
movie. Right off the bat.
Yeah, as soon as the movie starts, pretty much.
Cute as hell, you get to see her naked. So, fan service to for the boys and shit?
Now, yeah, it's like I had actually seen Amadeus, yeah, which came out in 1984, which is actually one of my favorite movies of all time. I love fucking Amadeus. Mm-hmm. And so, she played Mozart's wife, Costanza, yeah, in Amadeus. So I saw that before that. And when I saw this, I was like, hey, it's Stassi, because yeah, that's like one of the only other things I'd ever seen her in.
Yeah. And
she's cute as hell in this, though.
Yeah. Gunter's dad was pretty cool in it. He was out in the front, you know, and he was... One thing that really kind of stuck with me as a kid is just how creepy he was as a barker out in the front, trying to get people to come into the front house. And, you know, and he'd be... He was like, there is no escape.
Yeah.
There is no release from the fun house.
You know, I feel like...
Just creepy shit.
I feel like that was, like, sampled in some music or something like that. Yeah. And please, like I said, if anybody is like more of a person like super into goth than I am, I could swear that there was a song by Corpus Delicti, who were a French goth band in the 90s. And I swear that in one of their songs, and I can't remember which one it is, that there was a sample from a movie and it sounded awfully lot like the Barker from this movie, which it very well could have been.
Who is man enough? Enter this world of darkness.
You almost
of
like
the fun house. Yeah, yes,
and also fun fact, and this again, this is another thing I
happened
didn't notice.
Happened in Florida.
Yeah, this is another thing that I didn't notice.
Yeah.
So the guy that played the carnival barker that was Gunter's dad, the monster's dad, that was an actor named Kevin Conway. Now apparently he was a Broadway actor, and he had just won a Tony, at least according to Toby Hooper in the interview that I saw. He's like, yeah, he just won a Tony, like, before I asked him to be in this movie. He's like, so when I asked him to be in this movie, and he's like, I want you to be a carnival barker. And he's like, well, what are these other parts? So that, because there's three barkers in this movie. All three of them are played by that same guy, which I didn't even realize.
Yeah, I didn't realize either. They don't seem to be the same guy.
No, and that's what Toby Hooper was saying. He's like, that was he's like, okay, that's interesting. So you want to play these three parts? And he's like, yeah, I want to play these three parts. So he's like, oh, I want to see what this dude's going to do with this.
I wonder why I wanted to play all three of them.
And
just
because. He said he didn't know. He's just like, because. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, you know, knock yourself out.
Yeah, okay.
So Kevin Conway was the name of the actor. And Toby Hooper was like, I was amazed because it's like, a lot of people don't realize that all three dudes... Yep. You know, he was the peep show guy.
Yeah.
You know, because he had different wigs and he put on a different voice and stuff like that. Like, I had no idea that that was all three of those were the same guy. But they are. That kills me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
It's a good movie. Starts off with little boy hunting down his sister.
Little homage to Psycho.
Little
and
homage
Halloween
to Psycho.
A little bit.
Halloween. And also a little bit almost kind of like. He had a bedroom kind of like the kid from Salem's Lot with all the damn monster posters
and
stuff.
Also a Toby Hooper movie, yep.
Yeah, and he comes after his sister with a knife in the shower, but it was just a rubber knife. He just tried to scare her. And she had to go on a date with this guy. And
Buzz.
You know, on a double date with Buzz. Buzz, kind of this looking jock, tough guy with his muscle car.
And his feathered hair.
He's a dick.
He's kind of a douche, yeah.
Yeah, and she lies to her dad. About going to this carnival because some shit went down the year before when this carnival.
Yeah, they don't go into it a lot, but they're like, "Hey, didn't those girls disappear or get murdered or something like that?" And when that carnival was somewhere else,
so
like
she really wasn't supposed to be going. But the little brother overheard her on the phone lying, setting the whole thing up that she was actually going to go.
Little brothers are the worst. Yeah. Although I have two little brothers and they're awesome, so no, not all.
So
little brothers,
she goes there with her boyfriend on a double date, and the little brother goes over there. I think he went there on foot, didn't he? Or was he on a bicycle?
He did, yeah. Because remember, he was walking, and then on his way to the carnival, like he runs into all these weirdos. Like this one guy, like pulls over and tries to pick him up, like a pedophile or something. Yeah. And then he like points a gun at him and shit for no reason.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, that's weird.
So both the brother and sister are in there, but you know, I don't think they ever meet, do they?
They do not. No,
they don't ever meet. So they have two separate adventures, both involving Gunther the monster.
Yeah.
You know, I used to call him Tad.
Yeah.
When I was a boy,
Tad was the fetus.
Tad was the brother
that
didn't
was
make
brother.
It. Yeah. I guess that was the twin that didn't make
it. Yeah, maybe they were conjoined twins.
I think
that was the implication. There's a lot of shit going on under the surface in this kind of movie, now that like you think about it.
Yeah.
Like I said, on the surface, it seems very much like an early 80s kind of a, you know, kind of a bog standard slasher, like mixed with a monster movie. But then like when you kind of watch it, there's like a lot of other little things going on.
Yeah, it was, you know, seen it as a kid, you know, it scared me. It was a creepy flick.
Well, there's something inherently creepy about carnivals.
Yeah.
You know, with all the, and Toby Hooper was saying that too. He's like, that's what intrigued him about the project. I mean, he had only done, I guess he'd only directed two movies prior to this. He did Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1974, and then he did Eaten Alive in 1977. And this was the next one that he did. The next one that he did after this was Poltergeist, which, like I said, they don't know if he directed it or Steven Spielberg or whatever, but he gets the credit on it anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this was the one in between Eaten Alive and Poltergeist. And he said that he had always been creeped out and fascinated by carnivals just because he's like, I was always intrigued with the idea of like this whole like tribe of people that just like went from place to place. They were like these itinerant people that just like would come to your town and like set up all this stuff. And they always seemed like really seedy and like kind of creepy and shit, but also kind of fascinating. So he's like, so he really wanted to do something with that. He didn't write the screenplay, but, you know, I think someone had sent him the screenplay hoping that he would direct it, like, because he was trying to write it in a way that, like, Toby Hooper would dig that. So, you know.
Yeah, the movie starts off with a bang, too. I mean, they're walking around, they're having a good time in the carnival. They're looking at them peep shows and freak shows. And then they make this pact that they're going to spend the night, and they're going to spend the night in that damn funhouse.
In the funhouse. Like their friend did or something, because I think one of them comes up with
that. The girls get on a payphone, and they cross-wire it, so the parents think they're spending
like
the night
at
the other
place.
Like
you did when you were a teenage girl. Right. Yeah, I'm staying at so-and-so's house. Yeah, I'm staying at her house.
So they break into the funhouse and wait for it, and they're up above it, which it doesn't make any sense, really, because it's supposed to be a traveling carnival, but it's obviously that they're in a... It's obvious to me that the funhouse is a permanent construction, and it has a basement and an
attic. Well, I don't know, because they actually filmed this. And Toby Hooper was saying it was like, we couldn't afford to build our own carnival, clearly, because this movie cost, like, maybe $2 million, if that. And he said what we decided to do was shoot it in Miami, because that's where all the traveling carnivals go in the winter.
Okay.
You know, he's like, in the neighborhood where we were staying was like super sketchy, and people
that's
were getting
right.
shot
it,
at
it
and stuff.
Comes back every year, so it must have had a place where they'd set it up.
Yeah. Well,
they sent the funhouse up in a place that was built for a funhouse.
Yeah.
Because it had conveyor belts, and it had gears and drives. I mean, it was a building. So anyway, they're up in the attic, and they're watching, you know, they're spying on the carnies, and some shit goes down. One of the attendants, who's wearing this Frankenstein costume, he's got a limp, he's obviously handicapped, he's trying to, he can barely talk, you can't understand what he's saying, he's trying to cut a prostitution deal with the damn fortune teller.
Madam Zina. Who's like 80.
Yeah.
Well, she's probably not that old.
No, she wasn't that old, she's in her late 40s probably. I remember being an old hag, but I saw her again, I was like, actually, she's pretty hot. She had it'd be like granny porn, you know what I mean? She's not that bad, you know? So anyway.
I was going to say, you better mention that, because I remember you saying, when I was a kid, like,
yeah,
she looked like an old bat, but I'm like, hey,
she's not all that bad.
Is that right?
Yeah, getting old. So
that's what happened.
Yeah, and there was a good scene with them when they were in there spoofing on her earlier, getting fortune telling. And there's a weird part where, this is before, you know, before they'd snuck into the place. There was a part where they were riffing on Madam Zina's fortune telling, and she got up and kicked him out. When she kicked him out, she dropped the crystal ball, and the crystal ball rolled away, but then it rolled back to her, and she grabbed it.
So she's like magic.
So there was an implication that there was more to Madam Zina than met the eye. But she was also turning tricks. You know, I guess she's a gypsy.
Well, shit.
Or she's a gypsy from New York, because she had a strong New York accent when she got mad.
She was getting $100 from that.
Yeah, she talked.
From that deformed kid.
Yeah, she talked him into $100 to break it off. And they were up in they were watching. And he got so excited that he had what they call in the business a premature ejaculation.
What they call it in the business.
Well, she was... giving him a hand job, trying to get him ready, but he was already ready.
Probably just like, oh, that was easy.
So she wouldn't give him the money. He wouldn't give him the money back, and they started fighting. And
no refunds.
Yeah, and he accidentally killed her in a fit of rage. He threw her into a power box.
Yeah.
When they were fighting over the money. So he goes back to tell his dad. And they were up there, and they witnessed it. They saw it. So he goes back and gets his dad, and his dad's going, you're going to give $100 for her? I could have got you, and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I could have got you one of these hookers every year for $15.
Yeah, you know, all kinds of stuff. He goes, you don't know about money. Where is the money?
Yeah, because all the money
was in the till,
and the cash box was gone,
and it was all gone because one of the assholes,
one of the teenage assholes,
yeah, he stole the till. So he starts purring on Tad. What'd you do with the money? What'd you do with the money? I called him Tad. And Tad starts beating himself. It was just right. Beat yourself. Hit yourself. Beat yourself. He got him trained to beat himself. It was a cool scene.
He's like, I don't even have to do it. He just does it for me.
Well, all that was going on, and they heard him upstairs, and he was, you know.
Well, he dropped his lighter through the,
yeah, the lighter
wooden
fell.
Slats,
yeah,
and he was like, oh, someone's
like, oh,
up
there. And he tries to talk him down and everything, and thus the chase begins.
Yeah.
Because not only did they witness that murder, Dad had mentioned earlier before that he would bury her kind of like them two girls that he had killed the year before.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, we'll just blame it on the locals.
Yeah, so... The dad now knew that there were locals up above, and not only did they know about Madame Zina, they knew about the other girls that Gunther had killed the year before. And he also said some stuff. He implied that there were some other ones too.
Well, yeah, it's never just that many.
Right. So
they're always going to like
the. So the games begin at this point. You know, they're trying to hunt down these four teenagers through the fun house in the middle of the night to kill them. And, I don't want to spoil everything because the movie's so old. I mean, a lot of people haven't seen it. It is a good movie, and it had a pretty strong ending for a movie of its time.
Yeah,
especially of its budget.
I mean, like I said, yeah, it was very low budget. It actually made most of its budget back. I think it made about $8 million in the theater. Excuse me, but I would call it a slasher movie, but it's not super gory. You know, there's a couple scenes that are like kind of, you know, there's an axe in someone's head or something like that. Yeah, but it's not, it's more atmospheric, I feel like.
There was some action in it, though, too.
Yeah.
It's more like a thriller.
Yeah.
A monster thriller.
I mean, I kind of like that because I feel like some of the reviews I've read, and I was reading some reviews of people that had seen it as a kid and thought it was boring, but then they saw it again as an adult. And they're like, no, it's like they actually appreciated that it took time to, like, set up all the characters and the interaction between the characters, like, before this long chase sequence, like, through the funhouse with the monster guy, like, going after them.
Definitely the highlight of the movie is the characters and the dialogue. I mean, they're definitely spinning a tale to you. You know what I mean? They're telling you a story, and they do kind of keep you interested in the story and in the characters.
Yeah.
You know, it's not one that is... where the characters don't matter. There's a lot of stories that you don't really give a shit. You just put it on whatever. I remember it kind of got that way when we were kids because we saw it so many times.
Yeah.
We would just
this
watch
was
it
on
out.
Cable
They would
a
just
lot.
Play it over and over again when it was new. So it got burned out. You get burned out on it when you were a kid, but you still liked it, you know?
Yeah.
But revisiting it again, you know, I forgot what a good movie it was.
And like I said, now that we've seen it, like, in its restored state,
it
almost looked like, well, Tobe Hooper filmed it in, like, what do they call it? Like, anamorphic widescreen, which he really likes working in. And like I said, when you saw it on cable or on shitty VHS, you couldn't really tell.
Yeah.
But when you see it now that it's been restored, it really looks fantastic. It at times, like, especially the scenes inside the fun house, it almost looks like a giallo movie because it's like, there'll be like a close up of like some weird, like, animatronic monster up here and like it's green and then like in the background it's all red and then it's like dark all in between. And it looks like super cool. Like, he really has an eye for, you know, just kind of the framing and the colors and like making it look like kind of lurid and shit.
It looked as cool as, say, like, kind of like Evil Dead 2. I mean, not really the same things, of course, didn't happen, and Evil Dead 2 was really strong on special effects, but it looked to be like around the same quality.
Yeah.
You know, the color in giallo. It looked Italian.
Did, and like I said, a lot of American directors were really influenced, especially John Carpenter, and I presume Tobe Hooper as well, were really influenced by that genre, because, I mean, that's kind of where the whole slasher thing came from.
Now that you say it, it does look kind of like a Carpenter flick, when Carpenter's being good. Sometimes Carpenter
that's what I thought,
good,
like I said, but it reminded me very much, and some people have said it looks kind of a little bit Hitchcockian in places as well, and the way they kind of build up the suspense. Honestly, one of the best scenes in it is when, you know, the little kid who is Elizabeth Berridge's little brother, when the parents come to pick him up And she sees them, like, through the exhaust fan of the funhouse, but she can't get out. And she's, like, screaming for her dad. She can see him, and he's right there.
Yeah.
And she's, like, screaming and screaming, and they show it from the outside. And she's like, Daddy, Daddy! And, like, he can't hear anything. And it's like, that scene kind of got me, because I'm just like, oh, man, that sucks that she's going to get fucking murdered.
You know what this movie kind of compares to, I think?
What's that?
Probably, like, The Fog, but better.
Yeah, yeah. I actually like this a bit better
like it
than
better.
The Fog.
The story's tighter, more happens in it. But it looks kind of like The Fog. It looks like it was on the same budget.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you'd have told me now that you...
I think this is a comparable budget. I think Tobe Hooper said it cost about $2 million to make.
Yeah.
And like I said, they shot it in Miami. That's a real carnival. A lot of the extras are actual carnies. The guy that played Gunter, the monster, was actually a mime. He said, we didn't have that idea until he's like, me and a bunch of the crew were like out at some club or some restaurant or something in Miami one night. And we were talking about casting the monster part. And he's like, we saw this mime artist like in the street or something. And he's like, that's what we should do. We should get a mime like to play that part because it's like this kind of physical type of thing. So they got the guy to play him was a mime. So I thought that was actually a really good idea. Yeah. Also, the reason that he wears a Frankenstein mask is because he was just going to wear a generic mask over his regular face. I think Rick Baker did the effects for this, actually. That's why they look so good. But since the movie was produced by Universal, and obviously they had they had the rights to all the Universal monsters, so they decided...
Damn, you all right?
Yeah. So they decided to use that.
In fact, the kid had nothing but Universal monsters in his room.
That's why, because they had the rights to use all that, so they figured might as well.
Right.
They wanted to kind of homage that as well. Now, one thing that I kind of wanted to make mention of that I thought was really funny, and our British listeners will probably appreciate this, is that during the video nasty furor in the 1980s, this movie was actually singled out as a video nasty, and they attempted to prosecute it as a video nasty, but were unsuccessful because clearly
there's not a lot of blood in it.
There's no gore. There's nothing that, I mean, considering some of the other movies that were on that list, I'm not saying they should have censored any
just
one of them.
But
I mean, compared to like Cannibal Holocaust, there's like not even any comparison. So later speculation has it that when the British Board of Film Censors were looking for, you know, movies to prosecute, they actually got this movie confused with another movie that's actually better known by the title Last House on Dead End Street, but under some markets was released as The Fun House, two words. So, and that film was like way worse and like way gorier and shit. So I feel like that's probably the one they were aiming for, and they just got it confused.
Got it mixed up.
Because this one's called The Fun House, that one's called The Fun House.
Yeah.
I also wanted to, and Rob, who sent us this movie, also sent me a little video about this today, that apparently after the movie came out, there was a novelization of it, and it was written by Dean Koontz.
Okay.
Although at first he wrote under a pseudonym, though I guess later he put his actual name on it. And Tobe Hooper was saying, he's like, you know, I got some copies of the book, like, at the time, but I didn't read them because I thought, you know, oh, it's just like a piece of merchandising and it's probably not very good.
Dean Koontz wrote it, though.
But but he's like, a couple of years ago, I actually sat down and read it. He's like, that book is actually really good. And it like goes into like a lot of the backstory of the carnival and the backstory of the characters and shit like that. I haven't read it, but I've heard it's like actually pretty decent. I have to say I'm not a huge Dean Koontz fan. Some of his shit is good. But I'm going to have to like seek this out and read it because... Yeah. I'm kind of interested to see what he did with the story. Like I said, I love shit that's set in carnivals.
Yeah, was his mom a cow?
I wonder if it says in the book.
Yeah.
Call me Dean Koontz. Is he still alive? I guess he is. Yeah, tell me, was that was that guy fucking a cow?
Well, his dad did say that he was kind of like a demon. Didn't he say he was kind of...
He did kind of say...
Fierce like a demon or something. He's scrawny. But he makes up for it, I guess, in ferocity and the fact that he doesn't really appear quite human.
Yeah, well, he definitely
when the mask comes on, he actually, to me, even when I was a little kid, he looked like an albino vampire bat.
He did.
That's what he looked like to me.
Yeah, he looks like animalistic.
Yeah,
I mean, he's clearly supposed to be like a deformed human, but he really doesn't.
He had fangs like a vampire bat, and big wide spaced eyes. And his eyes were pink, and they just didn't, because they were so far apart, they didn't look like a human eyes. Look like animal eyes.
Yeah. And like I said, this,
and
I think
he had evidently ripped the little girls apart and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then his dad said he ripped them apart.
I don't remember if he said that or not, but yeah, he might have.
One
thing they did in this, which, you know, the same kind of thing they did in Frankenstein and King Kong and everything like that, was they made the villain, the monster, he was kind of sympathetic, too. Because he couldn't help looking like that. And he wasn't, like, smart enough to really know what he was doing. And, like, the way that his dad treated him was like, oh, I should have strangled you at birth.
Yeah, yeah, his dad was mean to him.
He was, like, super abusive and stuff. So you almost kind of felt bad for
him.
He
would back off of it, though. But, you know, his dad was a dick, too.
Yeah, like, his dad later be like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't really mean that, and blah, blah, blah. But that's, like, something that abusive people
do. He was also kind of,
though.
I think he was also kind of manipulating him to get him to finish the mission.
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly what he was doing. Yeah, because he was, oh, I'm sorry. Just, like just do what I told you to do, and everything
be
will be
right,
okay. And, like, you know, I won't be mad at you. And stuff like that. So you did kind of feel sorry.
Although
for him
he did tell the victims before he killed him that one scene. He says that he's not much to look at, and blah blah blah. But he will be a great comfort to me in my old age.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Was he implying that he could send him out to go kill people, or was just going to take care of him? I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm like that. I don't think that Gunter was going to be taking care of anybody.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be too much of a help. I mean, you know.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I guess he could. Maybe. I guess he could do stuff around the circus.
We're thinking too much and reading too much into a B movie, really. This is a B movie. It was just
That's all right, man. That's what we do.
It's a well done B movie.
Yeah, and like I said, if you like Tobe Hooper's other movies, and I don't see any reason why you wouldn't like this one. Like I said, it's a pretty good slasher sort of monster movie from the early 80s. Kind of better than a lot of the ones that came out at the time.
Yeah,
and
it was better than The Fog. I'd put it at the same level. I'd like start off with like The Fog, right?
Yeah.
But better.
Yeah.
What else could you think is on that, closer to it, you think?
You're putting me on the spot.
Yeah, I'm putting you on the spot. Maybe,
I don't really know, actually. What's in it?
What would be about that same level?
It's one movie that I really liked that I saw at the time. I think it came out the same year as this, was My Bloody Valentine. Although I think this was better than My Bloody Valentine, just because it looks more stylish.
Yeah.
My Bloody Valentine, I feel like, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being more workmanlike.
Around the same time, also Terror Train, and I'd say this is better than Terror Train.
Terror Train was real good, too. But like, Terror Train was shot, like, that was, like, pretty classy looking, I remember.
It would, okay, you know what? This story actually is better than Friday the 13th Part 1.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
It's a lot more atmospheric. Like I said,
Didn't have the same, you know, it wasn't the same slasher kill scenes and special effects. This movie doesn't actually need that.
No. Like I said, this is pretty tame, like, as far as violence and gore and stuff goes.
Okay, you know what? You know what? I'm going to put this at the same level? I'm going to put it at pretty much the same level as The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, okay.
I would say about like that.
I was going to say that the thing that probably elevates this one is the whole carnival setting.
Yeah.
Because it almost becomes its own character. You know what I mean? Because you can tell that it's a real functioning carnival. Like some of the shots he gets of it. I forgot to mention that he did two really amazing crane shots in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which maybe are some of the first ones ever done. He said we had like an 150-foot industrial crane.
I mentioned it. They must have had a crane or something.
Yeah, it was 150 feet long. He said it was in three sections.
Yeah, I didn't expect that because that just wasn't
really... Not
from
a movie of that time period. They didn't really do it much back then.
No, the early 80s B-movie slasher type horror movie. You didn't see crane shots. You didn't expect shots like that.
Like, now it's easy because you can do shit with drones and everything like that. But I was like, and I know, I was surprised too. When I saw that shot, I'm like, holy crap.
I was waiting for it to cut. It goes, no, they can't keep going. Nah, it's going to cut. No, it went on a good.
Yeah, he said it was a big industrial crane. It wasn't made for that. He said, we just had it and we had the idea to put the camera on it.
It was a nice.
They had to climb up on it. It was 150 feet long.
It was a nice smooth, it lifted and full pull back and pan at the top. And I was like, man, they went through the whole range of motion.
Yeah, there were two shots like that in the movie, and they were really nicely done. Mm-hmm. So like I said, the whole setting of this really, really elevates it, I think, into something better than a lot of the slashers of the period, just because the carnival setting is like so rich and colorful, and there's like so much you can do with it. And it's also kind of like has that whole creepy, seedy underbelly of America type vibe that's like so effective.
And what was funny is that at the time it got no recognition. It just kind of went unnoticed because of the genre. I mean, yeah. Horror was just like bottom of the barrel.
No matter, it got mixed to positive reviews.
If it wasn't The Exorcist or The Omen, they didn't give a shit.
Gene Siskel loved it.
Did he? Yeah, good.
Okay. He really liked
it. He saw it for what it was then. Yeah. He recognized greatness.
Yeah.
Because the average person, you know, back in those days, we grew up, we know the deal, we grew up back then. If it wasn't The Exorcist or The Omen, then it was a cheap, low-budget movie. They didn't give a shit.
Yeah, people did not really appreciate horror movies, I think, the way they appreciate them now. And I'm not saying that there weren't, a lot of them weren't cheap knockoffs and they sucked, because they did, but yeah. I don't know, a lot of movies in every genre are cheap knockoffs.
We got to do Evil Speak.
We did that already.
We did Evil Speak? Okay, yeah. That's right. We did that. We've done so many of them, I forgot which one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did Evil Speak. I remember doing a card for that a while back.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch we have to do. Like I said, we bought some, and it's like, I just pushed this one up because Rob sent it to us, and it was kind of a surprise. And I was like, we'll do this on the next show then. And I'm just really sorry that my voice sounds so crappy, and I've like had to stop and cough and all this other kind of crap. So hopefully it's not too annoying for you.
Yeah, we might have to edit some coughing out.
Yeah, we'll see. I might not. I might get too lazy.
Much better shut it down. I mean, your voice is giving out.
Yeah, it is. All right. So that will do it for our retrospective on Tobe Hooper's 1981 film, The Fun House. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thanks again, Rob, for sending us a copy of it. We really appreciate it. Remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there is a little button in the sidebar to a PayPal account. We will see you next time. Bye.